Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is the House Water Committee, February 4, 2005. We have an informational meeting today. The Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board will be making a presentation to us. And I see we have the whole crew here. Welcome. Please proceed.
Thank you, Chair Jensen. If I might just introduce myself to you and the committee members. My name is Tom Beiler. I'm the acting director at the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board. This is I started on January 3rd, so I have 1 month and 1 day under my belt with the agency, and I'm very excited to be a part of OWEB. It's an exciting place to work, and I've been very impressed with the staff work and getting to know the folks and the issues. Today, well, first of all, I want to introduce on my left is Ken Beerley, who is the deputy director and will be has served as the acting director for about 6 months at the latter half of 2004 and did quite a good job heading the agency for that period. And on my right is Allison Henze, who is the agency's legislative coordinator and a policy specialist within the agency. What we want to do today is give you an overview of the Oregon Plan for Salmon and Watersheds and also a description of the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board's role within the Oregon Plan. And we'll have a PowerPoint presentation that Allison will run you through that will give you some historical perspective on the Oregon Plan, its origins, and how it was developed through actions of the governor and the legislature, and then we'll walk you through the primary elements of the Oregon Plan, what it is essentially. And then lastly, we'll give you an overview of the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board, our functions, and our contributions to the Oregon Plan. So with that, with the chair's indulgence, we can get started on our presentation.
Okay. Before we hear their presentation, it's necessary, I think, and important for me to point out that the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board is required to give a legislative oversight committee a report on the 15th of January in the year that the legislature meets. The report is to give us an overview of what has happened, not only within the not only within OWEB itself, but is also a report that provides us information from reports that are supposed to be coming into their office and that they're supposed to be familiar with from the other agencies that are working with the whole issue of the Oregon Plan. And before further we proceed with the meeting, I would need to welcome to our committee Representative Tomei. I don't know why she wanted out of the committee, and I'm not sure how she got conned in to come back on the committee. But I think part of the reason she got conned into coming back on the committee is because Representative Schaffler, who wanted on the committee, also wanted on another committee, and he was subsequently, because of various and sundry things that have happened in our building, reassigned to the Ways and Means Natural Resource Subcommittee. And Representative Tomei apparently drew the short straw to come back in here. So
I would beg to differ, Mr. Chair.
Oh.
So would I. So would I. I feel very
fortunate.
We are
delighted, however, to have Carolyn, with us again. She's been on the Water Committee since she first arrived in the building, I believe. And it is with some appreciation that I have that she's rejoining us this time. She will bring a sense of some legislative history that the problem with that is now I have two Democrats who will be here that have a fairly good legislative history, and that will be difficult to make me more accountable, I guess, than I might like otherwise to be.
Mr. Chair, can I also just make a comment that I'm thrilled that the gender balance is getting a little bit better on this committee as well, but not that I'm very sad to see Representative Shoffer go, but I know his heart will still be in water.
I know, I think your point may be well taken. I serve on another committee that the gender balance is really not very good at all.
Too many women?
What?
Too many women?
No.
The other way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a problem around here.
Yeah,
we're outnumbered.
I know. It's terrible.
You make up for it.
You make it now.
Mr. Chair, I'm honored to be able to return to this committee, so thank you for accepting me.
It is truly my pleasure.
Thank you.
But we truly do and will miss Representative Shoffler, and we appreciate his presence here today. He's always been a real pillar of strength for us.
Well, and thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm glad we're having this presentation because this isn't subject matter close to my heart, but I guess now would be a good time just for me to say I want to thank the Speaker for her faith in me, as I did want that assignment. She also gave me this assignment 2 years ago when I requested it, and again this session. And, you know, people in land use think they got it tough. They've been arguing over water, which I've learned over the last 150 years, and it'll go on, I'm confident. But I just do want to say I didn't know the chair before I come to this building, and it's been a true pleasure and honor to serve with him on this committee. And if I'm a pillar of strength, I owe much of it to him, because he's the kind of person, he's the kind of legislator and human being that I hope I am, will be someday. And it has been a great honor to serve with you, and I look forward to serving with you in the legislature and keeping my eye and on the water issues, and in any way I can help, I'm always at your service. But it has been a great honor to work here with you, and I just want to thank you publicly for that. And you are, I am leaving my spot on the committee in very good hands, and she did not get the short end of any stick in my opinion. Thank you, sir. I do appreciate it, though.
Thank you, members. And as a note for the, of course, OWEB, Representative Shoffler, you will see again, I suppose.
We're looking forward to it.
Okay. And having sufficiently interrupted your presentation, Tom, please proceed.
Chair, you did remind me of something. I wanted to point out the documents that we left with you, and it should be in front of you. You have several documents. One is just a one-pager that is a real brief overview of the agency. This is just for your information. I won't walk you through it right now, but it gives you a sense of what the agency does and who we are and some of the sources of funding and our investments. The other piece, Chair Jensen mentioned our biennial report requirement. What we have is a synopsis of our biennial report for the last biennium. We do not have the completed document, and we did not have it at the statutory deadline. And I want to be clear with everyone that we didn't meet that obligation, and we apologize for not meeting that obligation. We do have some of the key data here in the synopsis piece. And we will have our final document by the end of this month, and we'll make sure that you all have that when it's completed and in your hands, and it will also be posted on our website as well. So I just wanted to be clear on that. And lastly, you have a document that was produced a couple of years ago, but it's still timely, and what it does is it describes some of the types of projects and the communities that are involved with the projects that do the on-the-ground work that the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board and helps to fund. So it's just some background pieces for you. And with that, I'd be happy to pass the baton to Allison.
Okay. Thank you. And members, in relationship again to the study that Thomas, report that Thomas talked about, and that will be out in a black and white form by the end of the month, if I understood correctly.
The printed document, we're working through that. There are some opportunities with this report has a lot of maps, and when you're presenting that kind of information, there can be exceptions at times to the black and white requirement. Okay. We're still working through that.
And I think you also pointed out that the material will be available on the web at your website as soon as you can. And I might refer and suggest, members, that this would be something that you want to look at, especially since it will contain information about other agencies that we will be bringing up for informational meetings like this. So it's an important part and piece of the work that we have, and we accept the OWEB's reasons. They have some very good reasons for why things were slowed down a little bit, and we accept that, but it does mean that I'm asking you to do a little bit of work in looking at the at the OWEB site and becoming familiar as that information becomes available for you. Okay. Enough editorializing here. Please.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Allison Henze. I'm a policy specialist with the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board, and I want to apologize in advance to Representative Barnhart for any acronyms I might use. thanks for having me here today. It's a real pleasure to be here, because in part of the chair, it's one of my favorite committees to come to. I'd like today to give you an overview of the Oregon Plan for Salmon and Watersheds, which is a much larger effort than our agency, and an overview of the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board. Of course, for several of you, no overview is necessary. Chair Jensen has been part of the development of the Oregon Plan since its beginning, and Representative Jackie Dingfelder was the first coordinator for the Tualatin River Basin Watershed Council several years ago. And so you've got some experts on your committee here if you have any questions later on. But feel free to call us as well. My presentation has three parts, and we're hoping it will only be about half an hour. The first part is the history of the Oregon Plan for Salmon and Watersheds, and then I'm going to take you through the elements of the Oregon Plan, and then finally I'd like to do an overview of the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board and its role in the Oregon Plan. And first I want to emphasize three things about the Oregon Plan that are very unique to Oregon, and if you don't remember anything else, I want you to remember them. And they are that it's a very collaborative plan. Its very nature is that it gets agencies who don't usually collaborate to work together and to coordinate their actions and to work towards a common goal, which can be very unusual in state government since we're often working in our own silos pursuing our own missions. And so this is very unique. It's also very locally based. There is a lot of input from local communities around the state about what happens as part of this plan, and I think that's really important. A lot of it is voluntary. It's people who want to see the recovery of salmon and watersheds because they love this place and the watershed they live in, choosing to step up and take these actions. And then finally, it's state-led, and that's important, and I'll talk about that a little bit later. The statutory mission for the Oregon Plan for Salmon and Watersheds is to restore our native fish populations and the aquatic systems that support them to productive and sustainable levels that will provide environmental, cultural, and economic values to Oregonians. And I think that's an important theme that underlies the Oregon Plan, is that it's not just about the environment. It's about communities and their economies as well. In its early days, and the Oregon Plan was begun in 1997, it was primarily developed to address two problems. One is that there were petitions to list salmon populations in Oregon under the Federal Endangered Species Act. And around the same time, there were lawsuits against the state of Oregon over the failure of Oregon to meet federal water quality standards in rivers, lakes, and streams. And these came a few years after the spotted owl had been listed under the Federal Endangered Species Act, and Oregon had seen the loss of a lot of timber-related jobs in rural communities around the state, and wanted to take a different approach to the listing of other species into federal water quality concerns to try and avoid that severe impact on jobs and local economies. Salmon decline in Oregon was highlighted by the 1992 listing of the Snake River Spring Chinook as threatened under the federal ESA, and in 1995, the Oregon coastal coho salmon was proposed for listing. And this was particularly worrisome because 60% of coho salmon habitat is on private lands, and it was very likely that there would be petitions to list other salmon species under the federal ESA that would follow quickly. When a lot of folks, including the governor and the legislature, got together to talk about how to address these problems, they recognized that federal action alone would not lead to recovery. Listing a species under the Federal Endangered Species Act often leads to regulation of actions on both public and private lands through the regulation of the taking of a species. But there is usually not a lot of federal dollars or action put towards affirmative actions to restore habitat or to make the situation better. It's usually more of a regulatory approach rather than a positive approach. And so folks realized that state action was needed if we were actually going to recover these species and improve water quality. And so state leadership was focused on actions to improve salmon populations through limiting fisheries, reducing negative hatchery impacts, and restoring and enhancing salmon habitat. At the same time that this was happening, approximately 14,000 miles of streams and 32 lakes in Oregon did not meet water quality standards under the Federal Clean Water Act. And Oregon, as I said, was facing lawsuits over its failure to develop water quality improvement plans, which are total maximum daily load plans. And so the governor and the legislature and a lot of other leaders, after a lot of talking, decided that Oregon needed to take a leadership role to address these issues. And the Oregon plan was the result. It evolved as a unique, innovative approach to accomplish salmon recovery and water quality improvement, trying to maintain local control over the salmon recovery planning rather than simply following a federal regulatory approach, and taking collaborative action to improve habitat and water quality, both on private and public lands. Here's a quick timeline of the evolution of the Oregon Plan for Salmon and Watersheds. And you've got a handout that has this slide presentation in case you want to look at it in more detail. But early on, the governor created the Governor's Watershed Enhancement Board, otherwise known as GWEB, in 1987. Soon after that, some of the first watershed councils formed. There was also the formation of the Watershed Health Program, which was meant to jumpstart the creation of watershed councils in southwest Oregon and northeastern Oregon. I won't go through the entire timeline, but you can see that the Oregon Plan is something that's developed over time, ending most recently in 2003 with legislation that Chair Jensen sponsored, which was making it clear what the definition of the recovery of species is and stating more clearly that recovery of species listed under the federal ESA is a goal of the Oregon Plan. Now I'm going to go into the elements of the Oregon Plan. A lot of people talk about the Oregon Plan as a four-legged stool. There are four main parts to it. The first one is the coordination of agency actions, and this primarily means state agencies, but it also means coordinations with local entities and with federal entities. And as I said before, that's because a lot of agencies, local, state, and federal, have very explicit missions, and they work to accomplish those missions, but sometimes those missions are in conflict. Sometimes they don't know what other agencies are doing that are affecting the same resource in a different way. And so this was to get everybody talking to each other, making sure their actions are coordinated, and problem-solving where there were conflicts. And I think it's a pretty innovative approach. The second leg of the stool of the Oregon Plan is local voluntary watershed restoration projects around the state. The third leg is monitoring and reporting, which is really important to assess the current condition of the resource on the ground, and to see whether progress is being made, and to inform future actions. And the fourth leg of the stool is science oversight through the independent, multidisciplinary.
Representative Cromwell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Allison, I was just curious with regards to the number one point there with coordinated agency actions. I know that there are, as you point out on the next page, several agencies involved. So does OEB then become the convener of those agencies to pull all of their plans together, or who is the agency that's responsible for, I guess, being the convener of all of these so that you can actually coordinate something?
Chair Jensen, Representative Cromwell, that's a great question. The primary convener of all of these agencies is the governor's office as the leader of the executive branch. OEB plays a coordination role in two specific ways. We coordinate the Oregon Plan monitoring team, and we coordinate the reporting of information about the Oregon Plan through the Oregon Plan Biennial Report. We also are working on coordinating information systems so that the data gathered is integrated. But it's the governor's office role to bring together these agencies through Natural Resources Cabinet, through several different teams that bring together personnel at different levels of the agency to make sure that they're talking to each other.
Go ahead, Representative. Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So how often do the agency, whoever it is from the agencies that gets together, to actually coordinate what the plans are so that you don't have, for example, DSL stepping on DEQ and DEQ stepping on DLCD and ODOT paving over everything?
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, Representative Cromwell, we have a slide further on in the report that describes a number of teams that have been developed, multi-agency teams that meet routinely. And it really starts from the level of the Natural Resources Agency directors, who this is our Natural Resources Cabinet, chaired by the governor's office, that meets twice a month. And they talk about broad issues, not just the Oregon Plan, of course, but it is one form of communication at a very high level for the agencies. There's also a group called the Core Team, which is a management level, usually a deputy level discussion group that meets monthly to talk specifically about Oregon Plan coordination. We also have, as Allison mentioned, a monitoring team that meets, I think, monthly. We have an outreach team that meets periodically. I don't know the time frame for that off the top of my head. And we also have region teams, which are regional managers of these agencies that meet on a quarterly basis, again, to talk about what each agency is doing. It's a forum for communication generally, but it's also an opportunity to coordinate actions under the umbrella of the Oregon Plan.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bedell. Mm-hmm. Please, Allison.
Thank you. I think you did that better than I would have. So this is a list of the teams that are the forums for that kind of communication to make sure that the left hand knows what the right hand's doing and that they're not working in conflict. And, of course, that's always a work in process. The second leg of the stool is local voluntary restoration efforts. And by that we mean projects on the ground sponsored by local citizens to improve water quality or salmon habitat or fish and wildlife habitat. And those are projects like when you have a culvert that salmon can't get through, either heading up or downstream, it will replace that culvert with either a bigger culvert or a bridge so that the salmon can actually get up to the habitat they need to get to spawn. Or it means planting native vegetation and doing weed control so that we restore the kind of vegetation that should be along a stream bank, and that helps reduce erosion, that helps filter the water for water quality, and it provides habitat for fish and other aquatic species. And we'll talk some more about those kinds of projects later. A really key part of the local voluntary restoration efforts are the groups that actually get it done. This is where the rubber meets the road. Without these partners, none of this would happen in terms of voluntary restoration projects. And some of the groups and individuals that make it happen are watershed councils and soil and water conservation districts. Local government plays a big role. Other conservation groups and private landowners take a lot of this on themselves simply because they care. just to give you a little bit more background.
Mr. Chair, may I make a comment?
Of course, Representative Schaffer.
And there's also business and industry involved in that too, right? I don't see them.
Absolutely. That's right. Thanks for adding that. Both in terms of private industrial landowners, both timber and agricultural, and in more urban areas, private business provides a lot of support for these efforts. Just to give you a little bit of background on the two main organizations who make these projects happen, watershed councils and soil and water conservation districts. Watershed councils were officially recognized in 1995, and by statute it lays out what their composition should be and the fact that they should be recognized by a local government. And they have to be composed of a diverse interests from the watershed, representing local government, agricultural interests, forestry interests, if it's appropriate, and environmental interests. And so it tries to represent the political spectrum and provides a great forum for these diverse interests to get together and talk about a common goal, watershed restoration, and how to accomplish it. It's not only a place for people to talk about improving the watershed, but it's a place for people to hear different viewpoints and understand one another better and understand how locals can have a bigger voice in natural resource management.
Are you backed up to where we were?
Sorry. Here we go.
Recognized by local governments, shouldn't, in your slide, shouldn't you recognize tribes in there too? Because they play a pretty significant role with us in a number of places as far as the Oregon plan is concerned.
They absolutely do. They're an important partner. I believe that there may be some tribal partnership within watershed councils.
Yes, sir.
But tribes do a lot on their own as well, and they're a very important partner. I know particularly the Warm Springs and the Umatilla tribes have very active salmon recovery programs. In fact, we were just out looking at some of the Umatilla tribes' projects a couple weeks back, and it was very impressive.
Representative Crummell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Allison, do the local watershed councils tend to have professional staff? And if they do, how are the expenses for professional staff paid for?
You're anticipating all of my slides. It's great. Chair Jensen, Representative Crummell. The watershed councils receive support for staff from a number of different sources. OWEB provides organizational support funding to about 58 watershed councils, and that's only partial funding. We don't completely fund a staff person. And so they get funding from other sources, whether it's members of the watershed council, local businesses, local landowners, other foundations. There are a lot of different funding sources, but I think probably the biggest source of funding for a single watershed council staff person is from OWEB through a competitive merit-based grant program. Some watershed councils, which have been around longer and are very productive, have several staff members. They may have one who focuses on education, one who focuses on monitoring, but that's more the exception than the rule.
Thank you.
Can I anticipate maybe a little more with that? Where does the Measure 66 money come in? Is that the money that may some of that money be used for this support?
Mm-hmm. Chair Jensen, that's correct. As you know, ballot Measure 66, which was passed in 1998 by the citizens of Oregon, has certain kinds of uses that are required under the Constitution because the ballot measure amended the Constitution. And 65% of that money has to be spent on the ground, but 35% of the money can be spent on things like organizational support, monitoring, education, research. And so some of council support comes from Measure 66, and some of it comes from federal grants.
Yes, no, I... And they may use this money to leverage money in many other ways, too.
Absolutely. In fact, we just had a study completed by a University of Oregon professor who found that for every dollar that OWEB invests in Watershed Council organizational support, that leverages another $5 for the council to use for projects, which is a pretty impressive number. I think.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, if I may follow up on that.
Yes, Representative.
Now, you mentioned that it leverages $5. Is that in further economic development, or is that in more dollars that are invested then in that local watershed council's activities?
Chair Jensen, Representative Crummell, that's to leverage $5 for investment in watershed restoration projects.
So, if I may follow up, Mr. Chair, so that's money coming in then for the purpose of the watershed restoration projects for wherever they might be on a lake or a river or whatever the case may be.
That's correct. This study also found that a conservative multiplier effect of about 1.7 in terms of when those dollars are invested in watershed restoration projects, that funds the purchase of local supplies, the hiring of local contractors, and that 80% of that money from the grant stays within the local county and the local community, so that there are economic benefits from that money going to projects.
Okay, because that was in a meeting that I had earlier today. That was what I was understanding, that it was a 5-to-1 ratio as far as leveraging, but that it was a 5-to-1 ratio in terms of economic benefit that was felt in the community. In other words, for every $1 spent, we see a return of $5. I just want to make sure that in my own mind that I'm clear on that, because when you said leveraging, that means one thing versus economic benefit being a different animal.
Mr. Chair, Representative Crummell, if I may, Representative Crummell heard that from me, and he's right to be confused, and I'm showing my rookie stripes here. I'm afraid that I'll have to be making these kinds of mea culpas routinely during the next few months, but I'm working on my chops, and I'll continue trying to hone my message. You can rely on Allison's description much more than mine. I apologize for the confusion on that.
Yeah. So if I may then, Mr. Chair, follow up, and thank you, Tom, for I guess admitting it. I wasn't going to out you. I was just but
we give the guy a break.
I'm trying here. So in terms of the economic benefit, though, to a community that has a watershed council, it's roughly 2-to-1 because you said it, the multiplier effect is about 1.7. Okay, I'm willing to round up to about 2-to-1. So for every $1 of that's invested in the watershed council, we get about a $2 return in terms of economic benefit to the community.
Mm-hmm.
Correct?
And that's true of the project dollars as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, briefly.
Representative Chopper.
Thank you. You know, I'm getting a new job Monday. I'll probably step in it a few times myself, so I know how you feel.
So just to go back to the local groups who make this work happen on the ground, the other kind of group that is one of the primary implementers of these kinds of projects is soil and water conservation districts. And these are local government agencies. There's at least one in every county in the state. They primarily serve agricultural landowners in addressing natural resources problems, doing planning. The districts have locally elected directors who are volunteers. And in addition to assisting with natural resources planning, they coordinate the delivery of financial and technical assistance for the conservation activities that private landowners do. And you'll often see that watershed councils and soil and water conservation districts will work together on projects and draw on each other's strengths to make them happen. I just wanted to give you a brief overview of the kind of money that's coming in to support Oregon Plan activities. This is a pie chart showing funding for Oregon Plan activities during 2002 and 2003, and these are for completed watershed restoration projects. And you'll see that there's a lot of federal activity going on federal lands. The federal land management agencies are investing a lot in watershed restoration. And OWEB runs a database inventory that tries to capture all of the restoration projects that happen around the state, whether or not OWEB has funded them. And so we ask folks who are doing the projects to voluntarily report to us about the projects they're doing, and that's how we get a pie chart like this. So, for instance, the federal land management agencies report to us about the projects they've done and the money they've spent, and the same is true of private landowners and local governments. And so you'll see that a lot of money is being spent on federal land, a lot of money is being spent on private lands, and that the state has a little less than a third of the investment in Oregon Plan restoration projects over that time period.
Mr. Chair, if I may, Allison, before you move on, where it says OWEB, ODF, ODOT, and so on, this, on the state side there, how much of that 29% comes from the general fund, and how much of that comes from other sources, whether they be federal funds or user fees or any other source that might be out there?
Chair Jensen, Representative Kremel, that's a good question. I actually don't have an answer to that right now. I can tell you that OWEB's contribution has no general fund dollars attached, but I can't speak for the percentages of the other agencies.
I'll measure 66 maybe.
Okay, thank you. The OWEB part is, if I may, Mr. Chair, I'm sorry. The OWEB part, the 11.5%, those are measured $66, so there's a lot of refunds?
Chair Jensen, Representative Crummell, that's both Measure 66 lottery dollars and federal grant funds.
Okay.
We get a significant federal grant in every year for salmon recovery that OWEB administers on behalf of the state, and that pays for some of these projects, too.
Okay, thank you.
Allison, Tom, in terms of OWEB, and I recognize that Measure 66 dollars, lottery dollars, are sometimes closely confused with general fund dollars, that kind of thing. But excluding lottery dollars, how much ballpark figure can you give me does OWEB get from strictly general fund?
Zero.
Yeah, zero. Okay.
Over the last three biennia, there has been no general fund in the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board budget. For the record, Kim Beerley, Deputy Director.
Chair Jensen, if I may, this slide will show you where OWEB's funding comes from. You'll see this is actually a little bit of an anomaly because this pie chart captures 3 years of federal grants, but you can see that OWEB is primarily funded through Pacific Coastal Salmon Recovery Funds, which are congressionally appropriated, and through lottery funds designated by ballot measure 66, with a little bit of salmon license plate money and a few other very small federal grants.
What is USFWS?
U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Forgive me now as I go back to, to where we are.
Okay. Sandy?
Yeah.
Representative suggests that we need an acronym sheet for some of the new members.
Those were not as versed in.
Yeah. No,
it's a good idea.
This is difficult to
it's a lot of
hear
acronyms.
All of these sort of things. Yeah. So
we got to get a piggy bank up here.
Well, we do have as long as we're talking about the agencies using it. Why that? You know, they got all sorts of general fund money that putting in a piggy bank.
Better not be putting it in.
I just suggested that because those of us who have been on water a while.
Yeah.
Pretty well versed, but it's alphabet soup, and I think it would be helpful to get that acronym sheet, and I'm sure we can find some.
Thank you, Representative.
Thank you. The next slide comes from the same inventory database that reports on restoration projects around the state by both OWEB and non-OWEB entities. And you'll see that there are a lot of fish passage and road projects going on, and I just wanted to explain that one. A lot of road improvement projects also improve the watershed, because when you improve a road, you might reduce sediment that goes into a stream that would affect water quality. And so we count road improvement projects, even if their primary purpose is to improve the road for transportation purposes, as watershed restoration projects as well. The same is true of fish passage. There are a lot of fish passage projects that are solely meant to improve salmon access to habitat upstream, but there are also some that come from regular culvert maintenance that ODOT or local cities and counties might do, but they also benefit salmon access because they have to do it in a fish-friendly way now. So that's why those two categories have the most dollars represented. The other projects that are primarily invested in by private landowners, private companies, and all the other partners I talked about are riparian enhancement, which is mostly native vegetation planting along a stream, in-stream habitat enhancement, which means restoring the kind of structure that salmon need in stream by putting logs back in stream or boulders or creating the resting places that primarily young salmon need as they're heading downstream. So that should give you a sense of the kind of projects that most of the money is going toward. The third leg of the Oregon, did I just lose? Okay. The third leg of the Oregon plan stool is monitoring and reporting. And that's really important because all of this work may be going on and there may be monitoring going on, but it needs to happen in a coordinated way so that we're answering the questions that we have. And then it has to be shared with all of the partners working on this so that it can inform their future actions. And so the Oregon Plan Monitoring Team was formed to accomplish that coordination. And their primary role is to document conditions through the monitoring that many agencies do, like the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife and the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality, and to evaluate change in water quality, fish populations over time, and to measure the effectiveness of the actions being taken under the Oregon Plan and suggest improvements based on the data they get. And then reporting is also important so that both the people working on these issues within the agencies, legislators, and other decision makers, and the general public can understand what the current condition is, what's being done, and whether improvement's happening from this investment of dollars. And so that's why OWEB is responsible for publishing the Oregon Plan Biennial Report, which Representative Jensen mentioned earlier, and which will come out at the end of this month. And that's why we have the Watershed Restoration Inventory that gives us the ability to show you where the money is being spent and by whom. And there's something new that actually just came online this week that I wanted to tell you about, which is the North Coast Information Portal. And that is a website that people can go to, and it's really a doorway to all kinds of information about fish populations and water quality on the north coast of Oregon. And it basically provides you arrows to all the kinds of sources of data you might be curious about when it comes to salmon and water quality. And we're excited to preview that, and we'll make sure that you get information about how to access that. It should be up on our website soon.
Excuse me, Representative Cromwell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. With regards to the Oregon Plan, the biennial report, and I understand that this is only a synopsis, and so a synopsis is just going to basically feed information, financial and that sort of thing. But what I'm wondering is, because it says evaluates implementation and effectiveness. So I guess there's really two things here. One is, does that include an objective, that evaluation include an objective outsider's look at how effective the program is, whether it be through NOAA or it be through, you know, Washington's agency coming and looking or business people looking at it and that sort of thing. And then also then, and I didn't get a chance to, before I came over for the meeting, look up your performance measures. But everything that's on the list there is related in your performance measures, and so you can relate everything and show how dollars that have been used for grants or even non-grant dollars that have been spent, you can show how they pertain to your performance measures, but also then this sort of external evaluation of how effective this program really is.
If I may, Ken Bailey, Deputy Director, Chair Jensen, Representative Crummell, no, we do not have an independent outside evaluation of the program.
Ken, yes. For the record.
For the record, Ken Bailey, Deputy Director of the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board. We do not have an independent evaluation of effectiveness. What we mean when we talk about effectiveness is having staff, and it's proposed in our 05-07 budget to have a staff person whose responsibility it would be to do independent evaluation of projects that are implemented to give us feedback on the effectiveness of those projects. At the current time, we require grantees to report to us on the implementation of the projects, so we can say with certainty that the projects have been implemented as proposed or modified from what's proposed, but we are not able to say with certainty, other than what we know from existing scientific literature about the effectiveness of projects in a broader scale, and we feel that that's a critical important element. We are working with the state of Washington on the effectiveness monitoring approach and have had joint meetings with the Salmon Recovery Funding Board in Washington to coordinate that effort so that we're doing things in a similar manner and we're learning lessons from them that we can apply in Washington and vice versa. But we have not established an independent audit structure at this point in time.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Representative Crummell, I might add just an additional thought on Ken's response is that we have been engaged with leadership from the governor's office and coordinating with our other natural resource agency partners on a comprehensive review of the Oregon Plan efforts for the last 7 years plus on the coast. And that essentially is a large geographic scale of adaptive management exercise where we're looking hard at what we've done, where our investments have gone, and what kind of return on those investments we're getting. That process, we just issued our draft assessment report on Monday. And there's no legal obligation to have any kind of public review, but we are asking the independent multidisciplinary science team to review our findings. We'll talk more about that group in this presentation. We're also opening this up to the public for their review. So in that respect, we are seeking feedback from outside sources to get their feedback on our analysis.
Mr. Chair, may I?
Representative Crummell.
I'm not a scientist, so I'm not going to get into all that scientific stuff, but I can speak to the visible improvements in my district in Johnson Creek Watershed and some of that has come about from money and projects from OEB. And I've been to places where there were structures obstructing fish migration where now there are fish going up their spine. So I think there's visual evidence for a layman like me to see. And I know many of my constituents, not only do they enjoy and appreciate it, they get right on out there in the dirt and do it. So I can see the difference in my district.
If I can take just a little more editorializing on this, and I imagine you'll be commenting somewhere along the line about it, but the ultimate, you know, reporting, the ultimate success is when we get to a point where we got fish where we didn't have fish, sort of thing. I mean, that's the measure that... And one of the things I think you've seen, all of the committee members and everyone has seen in the media a little bit, is Oregon's proposal about the Oregon coastal coho and a possible delisting of the coastal coho. If we're successful in getting that delisting at that point at this time, then because of limited funds, we'll probably move to another. Will spot, as far as ODF&W is concerned, probably another particular area, maybe the Lower Columbia or something, as far as what they're looking for. And as we will be able, if we're right in our assumptions of the Oregon plan, we will be able, as we continue on down in the future, to look at what progress is being made and have real quantifiable data that you can put on your dining room table, you know, when you have guests over for dinner.
And you can have a good Oregon wine or beer with that, too, Mr. Chair.
Forgive me. If we're able to improve the wine industry in the state of Oregon through the Oregon plan, that's okay. We'll take it as a byproduct.
I just want to remind the chair that you need to have really good water for good beer, too. So. Forget those microbrewers.
Thank you. I'm doing my part to help the wine industry, by the way.
For beer. We're making up on the beer part.
Just to follow up a little bit more on...
This is not the committee for self-confession.
Oh. My apologies.
Supporting the industry in Oregon.
Just to follow up a little bit more on Representative Crummell's questions, because they really get to the heart of it. Right now we're talking about the Oregon plan for salmon and watersheds, and the best performance measure for that, as you just said, is whether there are salmon where there weren't salmon before, but also the North Coast Coho assessment, which the governor's office has been leading, and which the various state agencies have been working with, both NOAA Fisheries, the federal government, and with a lot of different Oregon plan stakeholders. The best performance measure for that is this assessment and whether it shows that salmon are viable and whether the federal government decides to consider that in its listing decision. OWEB has its own performance measures, but OWEB has just one piece of the Oregon plan, and so OWEB's performance measures can't relate entirely to the performance of the whole Oregon plan. To get back to the legs of the Oregon plan stool, the fourth leg and last leg is science oversight, and Representative Crummell was asking about whether there was independent oversight of Oregon plan actions, and actually there is, as many of you know. It's the independent multidisciplinary science team. And there are seven members, and they're appointed by the governor, the Senate president, and the House speaker. They serve four-year terms, and they represent a lot of different Oregon plan disciplines, like fisheries, range management, forestry, hydromorphology, which is, you know, stream function. And they provide independent analysis and evaluation of the Oregon plan, and scientific evaluation that informs future Oregon plan priorities and actions. And so that is the more objective oversight of the Oregon plan.
And as footnote, that's the agenda to hear from them, as you're aware, on Monday. Or hear about them on Monday.
So, to finish talking about the Oregon plan was developed to address several problems: the decline of salmon, the decline in water quality, and while this is a long-term process, we are finding some solutions. Salmon habitat is being restored. We are seeing salmon where they weren't before. Water quality is improving in some areas, and the state's efforts are a lot more coordinated. And very importantly, Oregon has taken a leadership position on this issue, and Oregon's leadership is informing federal decisions. Oregon plan data on the Oregon coastal coho assessment will inform NOAA Fisheries listing decision on the coastal coho this year. And a few years ago, Oregon avoided a listing of the Klamath Mountain ESU steelhead under the Federal Endangered Species Act using Oregon plan monitoring data. So now I want to move to talking about OWEB. And OWEB is primarily and at its core a grant program. We provide funding to all of the local groups and individuals and businesses who make this work happen on the ground. We also have several other roles under the Oregon Plan in terms of coordinating the Oregon Plan monitoring team and reporting through the Oregon Plan Binary Report. But our primary function is to make effective and strategic investments in watershed restoration through grants to local groups around the state. Just to give you a brief timeline for the evolution of OWEB, the Governor's Watershed Enhancement Board was created, and that should be 1987, not 1997. Ballot Measure 66 was passed in 1998, which dedicated significant funding toward these issues. And Ballot Measure 66 stated that a single agency had to administer those funds. And so OEB was created as an independent state agency to be that agency that administers the funds. And that was OEB was created in 1999. And then in 2000, our other significant funding source started coming to Oregon, the Pacific Coastal Salmon Recovery Fund. And that's not a guaranteed funding source, and it may not go on for very much longer, but it's really provided a lot of money to these efforts over the last 5 years. What OEB does. OEB administers the constitutionally dedicated Measure 66 lottery funds for the purpose of improving watershed conditions and protecting fish and wildlife habitat. We do that by funding voluntary local restoration projects through a competitive grant program that foster cooperation, secure matching funds, and include youth and volunteers at a significant scale. We found that every year, on average, watershed councils use 250 volunteers to do their projects. Considering that there are watershed councils all over the state, I thought that was pretty significant. OEB also, as I said, coordinates the Oregon Plan monitoring and information management and the reporting element of the Oregon Plan. OEB's partners are essential. We're really, again, just the funding entity. This work happens because of our partners. And they are private agricultural and forest landowners who do this because it's important to them on a volunteer basis. Urban, rural, and industrial landowners are also very significant. The groups that coordinate this work are primarily watershed councils and soil and water conservation districts. And local cities and counties take a significant part of the work as well. The tribes do a lot of the work, particularly on their reservation lands and usual and accustomed lands, but are really important partners as well. And then state and federal natural resource agencies provide a lot of the technical expertise to make sure the projects are designed well and implemented well so that they'll be effective. OEB as an organization is led by a 17-member board that makes policy and makes the actual grant awards. The board members represent the public at large. There are 5 public at large seats, 1 tribal representative seat, 6 seats for state natural resource agency boards and commissions, so that we are coordinating with the other state natural resource agencies at our board level as well. And then 5 non-voting members are federal natural resource agency representatives to make sure that we're sharing information with them and coordinating with them to the extent possible.
What are those federal agencies?
Chair Jensen, they are NOAA Fisheries, the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, the U.S. Forest Service, the Natural Resources Conservation Service, and the Bureau of Land Management. Thank you.
And
the Bureau of Land Management.
Okay.
Yeah. And we also have 1 seat from OSU Extension, the Oregon State University Extension. There are currently 25 OEB staff positions. I think we have a few less actual staff persons, but we're in the low 20s. So we're a pretty small agency. We have 5 field staff who provide assistance to these groups and individuals in the field to understand what kind of projects they should be doing and how to apply for the funds and then manage the grants once the projects are ongoing. And then OEB Salem office staff handles the actual money processing of the grants and oversight of the grants, as well as the monitoring and reporting elements of our program and fiscal accountability for the grants.
So that's 20 Salem FTE.
That's right. Yeah. Actually, Tom Beiler corrected me. It might not be 25 FTE. It might be 25 positions with less people. But it's right around there. Yeah.
Okay. I won't quarrel with it.
Okay. You can tell I didn't put together a budget. I wanted
All right, Representative Schaffler will take care of the budget.
Oh, yeah, thank you, sir.
I'll do my best.
On it.
I wanted to give you a quick sense of how the board decides to award grant funds. We respond to grant applications that are submitted to us, and then we have 5 regional review teams. These teams are made up of state and federal natural resource agency professionals who have expertise in a lot of different natural resource disciplines, and they review the grant applications to make sure that they are designed well and look like they'll be implemented well and will actually make a difference to the resource. And they make recommendations to staff and the board about which grants should be funded. And on a general basis, we're only able to fund a little less than half of the grant applications we get in each round, and we have two grant cycles during the year. And so there's actually not enough money to fund all of the good projects out there. I've already showed you this slide. This is our funding sources, which are primarily state lottery funds and federal funds and no general funds. Just to give you a sense of how the money is spent, two-thirds of our funding is spent on the ground watershed restoration projects around the state. The other third is spent on all of the other kinds of projects. About 14% goes to watershed council organizational support, and then you can see small slices going to monitoring, education, technical assistance, and acquisition. Just to give you a sense of how many projects...
Allison, I just want to... never mind. That's not... These two slides that you just showed don't represent your entire budget, correct? Because you don't
That's
have
correct.
Your administrative costs and that sort of thing in there. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Chair Jensen, Representative Crummell, this is just the funds that are allocated through our grant program.
Gotcha.
We also have the monitoring function and the reporting function and other administrative costs.
Thank you.
This is a slide to give you a sense of how many grants for on-the-ground watershed restoration projects we funded around the state since OWIB was created in 1999. There are 715 grants, many of which contain several different projects within the grant, and $54 million that's been allocated towards those grants. You'll notice that there's a darker green background on the map of the state. That's federal lands. And the lighter gray background are private lands. And you'll see that the projects are happening on private lands because the federal land management agencies are doing their own watershed restoration. But that's why you see the clustering.
Excuse me, for the group here. I realize that the federal agencies would probably be doing their own, and I think many of us would probably have complained that maybe they aren't doing enough in the right areas, but you know, be that as it may. Is there any way we can provide some leadership for those federal agencies doing these projects on federal lands around the state?
Chair Jensen, for the record, Ken Beerley, Deputy Director. We have had direct conversations, particularly with the Forest Service, about ways in which we could, where we have shared priorities, invest both federal funds as well as state funds to target areas of common interest. And by what I mean there is we are looking specifically at ways in which we can deal with fish passage into from private lands into forest lands. And so we're helping them target funds on private lands so that federal funds can match our funds on private lands that would benefit fish populations that would be served by habitat that's available on public land. So in that way, we're working directly with the Forest Service to try to identify projects where there's a public land, private land benefit. The second way in which we're trying to coordinate priorities is where we have worked directly with the Northwest Power and Conservation Council, who has developed sub-basin plans, and we're trying to develop priorities, as Allison will get to here shortly, where there can be shared priorities so that there would to address common interests that that cross land ownership boundaries but serve to meet priorities of watershed health, water quality, fish habitat.
Thank you.
Just to give you a quick sense of the kinds of projects that we're funding in those dots on the map that I just showed, Obviously, we fund fish passage projects, which we've already talked about, which allow fish to access habitat that they were previously blocked from, which can be important to fish production. We also fund projects for riparian area enhancement, vegetation management, which is really weed control, grazing management. We do a lot of that in eastern Oregon, where previously livestock were in streams, which was affecting water quality and the riparian vegetation along the stream banks. And so landowners have come to us and asked us to help fund fencing of the streams to keep the livestock out, and then water development in the uplands to provide another water source for their livestock. And we've had a lot of successful projects doing that, which benefit both the landowner and the water quality in the stream and the salmon habitat. We also do a lot of upland erosion control because erosion affects water quality. Estuarine enhancement, which means restoring estuaries. That's really important habitat for young salmon before they head back out to the ocean and is pretty critical to salmon population survival. Here's an example of one of the fish passage projects we funded on Boxler Creek on the coast. You see the left picture is two side-by-side culverts which blocked passage to 90% of Boxler Creek. I'm sure you can't imagine how either a mature salmon could get up those or a young salmon could get back down. One person referred to it as, it looks like the business end of a shotgun. On the right, that's the project after it was done. They took out the culverts and instead they placed a bridge there, which opened up access to 1.5 miles of key spawning habitat. And 2 years after the project, more than 50 spawning coho were found above that barrier. The other project categories we've talked about are watershed assessment, which is what watershed councils do to assess the current condition of the watershed and identify priorities for what kinds of projects would best address the limitations to salmon recovery and water quality. There's watershed council support, monitoring, technical assistance, action planning, which even more specifically identifies priorities, and watershed education. There are a lot of school kids around Oregon who go out and help with plantings along stream banks and water quality monitoring to learn more about the resource in their area. An example of a monitoring project we funded is on the Midcoast. The Midcoast Watershed Councils is pretty sophisticated, and they did young salmon monitoring in 5 watersheds and used the information about their location and populations and what might be limiting their production to decide what projects they're going to target in the future. And so they're very strategic now about which projects they do based on this data. This is a map, moving on to watershed councils. This is a map of all of the watershed council boundaries in the state. There are about 92 watershed councils statewide. OWEB funds provides partial funding for 58 of those councils. And the reason we don't provide funding for all of them is that a lot of those councils are under the jurisdiction of an umbrella watershed council, which can represent 9 to 10 watershed councils. And so we provide funding for a staff person for that larger council. This is something we've already talked about, but I wanted to show you the economic benefits of watershed projects. As I said before, every dollar that OWEB grants to a watershed council for organizational support generates an additional $5 for watershed restoration in that local community. And 80% of those grant funds are spent in the county in which the grant is awarded. Looking ahead for OWEB, I just wanted to tell you about a couple of things that we're working on. One is the development of watershed restoration priorities in each of the 15 Oregon Plan reporting basins to inform our grant funding decisions and focus the kind of projects that local groups are working on. And we are working very closely where there's sub-basin planning going on. We're working very closely with the groups doing that planning, which are often watershed councils and soil and water conservation districts, to make sure that our priorities are consistent with the federal priorities and that our priorities inform the federal priorities. We are also working to increase effectiveness monitoring of the projects that we fund to better document successes and failures and to have that inform what we fund in the future. We are hoping to have a staff position that will be focused on effectiveness monitoring, to have accountability for these funds be even better than it is now. And one of the other things we're looking at is finding ways to increase the economic benefits of watershed restoration grants. And that we're still talking about how to do that, but it would be from asking local groups to bundle together the projects they do so they provide longer-term jobs for locals, and perhaps investing in local businesses whose core business benefits the watershed as well. And with that, we'd be happy to answer any questions that the committee has.
A quick question. When you talk about the 1 to 5, your next to last slide, and topic had been mentioned earlier, in that $5, are you including the in-kind types of contributions, or is this strictly hard money?
Chair Jensen, it's hard money, although about $1.50 of those $5 is OWEB watershed restoration grants. And then another $3.50 is hard money from other sources.
Where do you account for in the formula of this, the farmer's cat time? That he donates for a project that you have underway, or any of those types of things? Is there any consideration of that, or does any documentation of that type of thing that you have for us? Because my sense is there's a lot of people participation, and that there's a lot of, therefore, kind of in-kind participation in this sort of thing. And I see Ken is ready to answer my question.
For the record, Ken Beerley, Deputy Director, and I'm willing to talk about your question.
Does that mean not necessarily answered?
We do keep track of, and we allow for in-kind contributions to match OWEB funds. What we were looking for in this specific study that was referenced here was looking at other forms of direct cash contributions, so we weren't looking at that. But we do account for that. We can generate numbers on in-kind versus cash contribution match for our grants, and we will be pulling that information together for you. But we do keep track of that. That is extremely valuable part of how people get engaged in our program, is by contributing their time and energy. And we feel that that's an important element, and we allow that and recognize that in the match that is required to match our funds with non-OWEB funds.
Thank you. Tom.
Oh, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, again, Tom Beiler. One thing that there's been some interest in this study that we had done, and one thing that I think that we can do for you is get you a copy of the study. That would be helpful,
would,
I think,
yeah,
rather than having us try to describe it.
Sure.
We'll make sure that you and the other members of the committee have a copy of that.
I bring this up, in terms of the in-kind things, specifically for us to recognize, and I think there's a real need to recognize this, and it's really important that a lot of people out there are putting a lot of time, a lot of energy, and a lot of money that will not necessarily show up in the reports that we get from OWEB. The real strength of this program is not in the money that we can put into it. The strength of the program is what we get back from the people on the ground. And they're the ones who are going to bring salmon back. We can pour money into this forever and probably never get them back. But those people can help us get them back. Representative Shoffer.
Mr. Chair, you've just been reading my mind. And, the beautiful thing about this is I see the results in my district right at home. Joshua Creek starts clear out in Clackamas, rural Clackamas County, a bunch of farmers, and goes right straight through town, pretty close to Reed College and some of them in the
which is my district.
Pardon me?
It's in my district.
Right. I mean, it goes through geographic, economic, cultural areas that are very diverse. And I went to a meeting, a council meeting, and I walked in. It was at Reed College then. Now they have a new building. But there were, got young people with tie-dye T-shirts there and farmers there. I mean, they have a diverse opinion on a wide range of issues, but on this they're working together, and that's the beautiful thing about all this. And it is, if I were going to improve on your presentation here, it's directly related to what the chair is saying. I've read some of your, line item budgets for projects, and you know, the government, we're putting a bunch of money into it, but and you've got just private forest and landowners here, and that's good, but I would be more specific and point out that business and industry, you know, whether it be wood fiber products, agriculture products, the power generation, these folks are pouring a lot of their money, energy, talent, and labor and resources into this. And the folks that tend to, beat up on that part of our sectors in our economy, not only do they enjoy all the products those folks are producing, but I don't think they even know that these folks are putting money into this. And I really would highlight that. And I'm not just saying that because some of their representatives are in the audience. I go to Portland and I say, that it's more than what you may realize. And sometimes I think I've met with disbelief when I point things like that out. But if you all are pointing it out, yeah, I think it will help ease some of the tension and show that folks really, the people that work in the forest and ag and power generation really do care about their community. They're drinking the water and breathing the air and they love to fish and all that stuff too. So, we got enough to argue about in this state. If we can try and bring some people together, and I think this is a good vehicle to do it with, a great one to do it with, I think it would, that, you can't quantify the benefit from that either. You can't put that on a ledger sheet or in a budget or anything like that. And then when good people like me go out to ask for more money and taxes, maybe we'll be successful sometimes. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for indulging me.
Representative Trimble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just curious, Ken, when you were talking about being able to track the in-kind contributions and that sort of thing, following up a little bit more on Chair Jensen's question, then can that type of contribution count towards a match if there's a local match required, or if there's a match for of state to federal funds, for example, required? Can that type of if somebody in-kind contribution for either their time, their materials, use of a cat, going to Home Depot, buying supplies, that sort of thing?
Chair Jensen, Vice Chair Crummell, for the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board grant program, we specifically allow in-kind contributions, both of materials, time, use of equipment, to provide the 25% match that's required for our funds.
Okay.
Different federal grant programs have different requirements, and it's hard to speak about them in general terms. However, we have found that oftentimes that is an acceptable form of match. And what we've found by districts and councils around the state have gotten very creative in how they report that match so that they're making sure that they can leverage funds to the greatest extent possible. So what we will often see is that a local group will apply for a project that will involve landowner contributions, so they would match our funds with that, then they would use our funds to match federal funds so that the total project value would be significantly greater than what the federal funds would allow or what our funds would allow alone. And that kind of creativity at the local level has been impressive at times and very beneficial to local folks, sometimes almost incredulous. But generally it's been very, people are trying to make the most out of the resources that are available.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Dingfelder.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Great presentation. And it's a good reminder for me. But a couple of questions, actually, and I don't know who wants to address it, but the first one is, it just occurred to me when we're talking about matching funds from private individuals, does that include matching funds from the tribes, those figures? Because I'm assuming that a lot of our tribal members also contribute money on their own. So I was just curious if that is included, and if you don't have that answer, maybe.
If I may, Chair Jensen, Vice Chair Dingfelder, what we track in our database are the match that's provided to grants. And if there's a grant to a tribal entity, they're treated like any other entity. Their in-kind is the same as anybody else's in-kind. So they're no different. To be very candid, the tribes have not used our grant program to the extent that we'd like. We're working very hard with Bobby Bruno, who is the tribal representative on our board, to try to generate or develop better outreach to the tribes. Our conversations with the Umatilla tribes, our Confederated tribes in the Umatilla Indian Reservation, during our last board meeting, I think will help a bit in expanding those opportunities and awareness of those opportunities to tribal members.
Okay, thank you. I have a couple, they're not really follow-up questions, but they're somewhat related. And Ken probably can answer this the best, or possibly Tom, but do we have a sense how much federal funds we'll be receiving through the Pacific Salmon Fishery money for this next biennium?
Mr. Chair, Representative Dingfelder, we do have an estimate, and I think it's around $27 million, as I recall. I can check. Go to my cheat sheet here, just to be clear on that.
I think it's important to be clear about what you're asking. If the question is, do we know what might be anticipated in federal fiscal year 06, we don't have any idea. It will likely be less than what we have received previously. What we were awarded in federal, or what has been appropriated in federal fiscal year 05, was $13 million. With a $1 million earmark for fish marking trailers. So that's what's available. I have, as a matter of practice, tried not to anticipate what Congress will do, because I've been fooled more times than not. We don't know what 06 will hold for us. If it occurs, it will likely be less than what it has been in the past.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I have one final question.
Right.
I got them all over at once. You mentioned the Coastal Coho assessment, and it's on the back of the sheet, and I have requested from the Chair if we could have a separate presentation, and I know, Tom, that's your former hat, so I don't know if that would be appropriate for you or have Ed Bowles from ODF&W come, but I think that's probably one of the most important issues we have on our plate, is the conclusions of that study.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dingfelder, I agree, and that was one of my closing recommendations for this group, or suggestions, would be to have a presentation. We have several folks, Ed Bowles, Jay Nicholas from our office, who have put together, I think, a very interesting overview of the analysis that we went through as a state as part of this Coastal Coho assessment. I think it's really the cutting edge of the Oregon plan, and it's going to help us be much more strategic and effective in our future investments on the coast. And as Representative Jensen mentioned earlier, we're looking at moving into other parts of the state to do a similar type of analysis. ODFW has done fantastic work on this. OEB has made significant contributions in funding, and some of our staff as well. And I know the other agencies would be involved in that type of analysis as we would move that to other parts of the state. But I think this committee would find that overview very interesting.
And Mr. Chair, one follow-up to that is, and I don't know if you'll be doing this, but whoever comes and makes presentation, I think it would be helpful for this committee, you know, because some of the committee members haven't been following that process, to delineate or have some type of, maybe graphic that shows how our process here interacts with the federal process and NOAA Fisheries response and the timing of that, and because it's not completely clear to me, and I imagine for other members it might be a bit confusing.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dingfelder, we can absolutely do that. And one thing that's important to note about the Coastal Coho project is that it's much more than just the listing question. That seems to be getting a lot of the attention with the media right now, but our goals are much broader, and they are focused on Oregon Plan goals. And our work will continue beyond the federal decision on the listing to move forward on a conservation plan and to achieve rebuild populations in the coastal area in accordance with community needs.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Tom.
Mr. Chair, I would like to thank the committee for the opportunity to provide this overview of the Oregon Plan and to give you a glimpse of OEB's role within the superstructure of the Oregon Plan. And we look forward to having continuing discussions with you over the course of the session.
Thank you all very much. I appreciate your taking the time and being here today. I look forward to the reports that we'll have. We'll certainly, I have every confidence that we'll see you back here before the session is over. You know, with that, if there are no other closing marks, we will close the session.